it's time for a bonus. A bonus episode. I love episodes of theater. We're going off the beaten path.
Off the beaten path.
We're off.
Hey, dudes.
Hey, we're back. We're back.
We were just recording like 20 minutes ago.
Way to ruin the magic.
The audience doesn't know that. Our fans don't know that. Don't pull back the curtain, Mr. Wizard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's been cool kicking it with y'all for this past hour. Everybody's been beat up by work this week.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So the vibe is low, but I'm going to do my best to pull it back up. How are you guys doing outside of work? How you doing on the
life train tip?
Anything good?
Well, I've got a fun little tidbit.
Oh, down.
The people from the Kelly Clarkson show reached out,
right,
and they want me to do a segment in September that's going to air in September because it's like her anniversary for American Idol, so they're looking for singers to be a part of this segment.
Cool. Let's be clear, it's not Casper.
They
it's
want
Pam.
Me. Isn't that weird?
They want you. Yeah. No,
that's
it's not weird at all.
It's well deserved.
Fuck Casper.
It feels awkward.
Let me just say. Yeah, I'm saying
it. Whoa. He didn't
we love Casper here.
Casper, he didn't mean it, baby.
Casper is Pam singing.
He's never
dog.
Given me anything but attitude.
If you don't know, I highly recommend checking them out on
my,
the...
My old cat is being my PA. She's always my PA. She's in her box office. Her box office.
Yeah. Wow. Pam does have a TikTok, if you don't know. She has a TikTok called...
The Pam Quinn.
The Pam Quinn, where you can listen to her sing, and her dog joins her, and it's good
times,
but also she's just a phenomenal singer-songwriter, who we should be supporting in other ways besides just that TikTok. So we're going to get her on the Kelly Clarkson show!
Yeah!
Fingers crossed. Fingers
crossed. We're going to make it happen.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I'm excited to be here because we're talking about a really phenomenal film that came out recently, and... welcome to it. Welcome to Theater. Theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm Jibeli Besham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss, debate, and disseminate the evolutions of the great playwrights, but by taking a macro look at three of their plays. But this is part four of four. That's right. This is the ending of our miniseries covering... movies that are shit.
Movies that
turning,
are shit.
Turning musicals into movies. That's what it is.
Well, we're getting there.
I'll get it right one day.
Yeah.
Well, it's
only
okay.
the end of the series. Yeah,
that's
we're
okay.
Done. We're
that's
done.
Okay. And we're joined once again by our incredible songwriter and friend. Pam Quinn. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Beep, bop, boop, boop.
Bop. Bop.
Good work. Yeah, so this week we're discussing my pick? No, whose pick was this?
Your pick.
It had to have been your
pick. This is the new West Side Story. Steven Spielberg's West Side Story. I want to know sort of what y'all's West Side Story history is, but also, you know, an initial take on the film. Go for it, Scott.
Oh, I mean, I grew up with West Side. I'd seen productions of it and seen the film many times. I got to see the original movie on the big screen when I was a very little kid because I lived on Air Force bases and they had movie theaters, and then they would do like you know, reruns of big classic movies. And so I remember going to see it like as a little kid, like 5 or 6. And then I directed or assistant directed a production. And so I've seen it, you know, I think it's part of our culture and heritage at this point. It's sort of woven into the fabric. And the movie, I was not looking forward to going to see that movie.
I remember that.
And I liked it, and there are a lot of things I love about it, and there's a lot of things that Mr. Spielbergo does where he Spielbergs all over the fuck of it. And we'll talk about it. Yeah.
Siege?
My parents took me to see this at Sangamon State. It was one of the national tours going through, so that was like the first time I saw it live. And then I have seen the original movie maybe two or three times now. So while, like, this is one of those musicals where you automatically know a lot of the music from, kind of like Little Shop of Horrors, but in a completely different way. I knew a lot of the music, but I'm not as emotionally attached to this movie like a lot of people are, the original film. So I went and saw the new one in theaters and just really enjoyed it for... And I can get into it more, but I mean, it just has more of a... I mean, other than the fact that it's placed there, it has more of a New York feel because they're like, okay, we're doing a huge fucking musical theater hit. We're going to get people that are really well-trained singers and dancers because, like, my favorite shit are the group dance scenes. They're no fucking joke. In both of the films, I really enjoy them. So this was, like, Into the Woods, this was my second time watching this movie. And I think I liked it better the second time than I did the first time.
Pam.
So the first time I watched this version of it, of West Side Story, was for this podcast. I just hadn't gotten around to it.
Oh, wow.
So like my first time watching Into the Woods, I was drunk. I decided to get drunk and watch West Side Story. This is not my musical, kind of like CJ, what you were saying. I do not feel an emotional connection to this musical, but I am a huge Romeo and Juliet fan. So it's tough for me, but I think it's for selfish reasons because musicals that are all dancing, that everyone's a dancer, I can't relate as a performer to it. So it's harder for me to get super into the musical because I am not a dancer in any way, shape, or form. So West Side Story, I appreciate it. I always have. There's One Hand, One Heart, I think is one of the most beautiful melodies in musical theater, but it's just not my musical.
Gotcha. Yeah, I grew up kind of similarly to you, Scott. I was watching the movie my whole life. I was a really big fan of it. I saw my brother play Officer Krupke when he was in high school. I was really, really young, and I just fell in love with it. And then I played Tony in high school.
Nice.
Which was interesting. It was a weird casting, but it was fine. There just really wasn't. It was a small school. There wasn't anybody that could sing it. That was really all it was. Why were they doing it? Also, a white Maria, and like it just, you know, and all, we didn't have a lot of guys that were dancers, so they just got the football team to play the Jets and the Sharks.
Love it.
And things
love
like
it.
This. Yeah. But I also played Officer Krupke at Music Theater Wichita. And because it was the same season as South Pacific, where I did Luther Billis, I kept the same payment each week.
Oh, nice.
So I was making like $1,200 a week to play Officer Krupke.
Nice.
And he says like four things, right?
Yeah. It's the highest paid Officer Krupke.
Probably. Probably. Yeah, but I just really have always loved this musical. I've seen it plenty of times. I've seen it at almost every regional theater out here. They do it every 5 years or every year there's one regional theater doing it. I saw a really cool In the Round production of it at Glendale Ooh. Center Theater when that was still open, and it was really, really cool. I didn't think you could do this in the round, and it worked. The best part in the round was the gym dance. It was just cool.
Yeah,
so fun. But then I also am dear friends with Russ Tamblyn, who plays Riff in the original movie.
Yeah.
He and I were in a show together original musical together maybe 5 years ago now, and we hit it off because the first time we hung out, he said, "Do you smoke weed?" And I said, "Yes." And so we smoked weed together, and he showed me, before it was released, he showed me all of his scenes from Twin Peaks The Return. And it was huge for me. It was a really big deal for me. Little Bailey was freaking out the whole time. But I'm a huge Russ Tamblyn fan, so it was fun to actually get to know him and his family. And then he introduced me to George Chiklis, who plays Bernardo in the original film, who also, they both follow me on Instagram.
Who's also in White Christmas.
True. So I have a connection in my own way to the original. When I rewatch it now, you know, there's a lot of brown face. There's a lot of not great stuff happening there. But it's also a phenomenally beautiful piece of work. And I think everybody in it, even the people who aren't singing for real, phenomenal stuff. But then I saw this movie. I was fully ready for it. I knew exactly what I was headed into, and I wasn't disappointed. And that's just kind of my, that's like my full take. Like, I just was like, I know that Spielberg loves this as much as I do. I'm going to have fun. And I walked out like, yeah, what else could I ask from this? And I felt like things were justified better than they are even on stage. I felt like the Kushner script alone amplifies this thing and just elevates it to a point of mastery that I just don't think we've seen a movie musical do yet. And this is really, this is just it for me. I think this is like the movie musical of our generation right now. And big fan. But we'll get deeper into it. I want to hear what it's about.
Yeah.
Because no one knows. No one's ever heard this story before. CJ, what's that, the thing you do? That thing you do.
Can we do that movie one
day?
Can
we just do that thing you do? Yeah.
Yes.
Let's do that right now. Forget it. All right. Do a breakdown for that, CJ, right now.
CJ's breakdown.
You can do the real one. You can do it.
Two bro gangs, both alike in dignity.
Yeah.
In fair New York, where we lay our scene.
Yeah.
From long-told grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. Mm. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers, take a chance. It doesn't end well.
Very good.
Nice.
Yeah,
good.
That's nice. In fair New York, where we lay our scene. Yeah, it's well done, CJ.
I giggled the whole time while I was writing that.
That's great. I'm really proud. I'm proud to know you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there are 10 listeners laughing their asses off. Right? no, really good. Really, really solid stuff. Good job, CJ. A bit I would not have thought of that. I'm very proud of you for coming up with. I should mention, I also have a connection to this film specifically. I've mentioned on the podcast, I'm sure, many, many times. Anybody's in this film is a dear, dear friend of mine who goes by Ezra, is credited as Iris Menez, and is was Amneris when I was in Aida in high school.
Mm.
Things like that. So we did a lot of musicals together, but they're from Wichita and are a phenomenal performer. I have an opinion on the anybody's thing, but I think we'll get there later, and it's
sure
not necessarily a positive one, but we'll get there. But Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
This is somebody we've talked about on the podcast a few times. Something I thought of the other day. You said this, Scott. You said, you know, he's over Spielberg's in moments in this film, which I do disagree with, only because it's a musical where I'm just like, yeah, do everything. Do all the stuff. But I was thinking about Hook, because you dislike Hook, the film, right?
Oh, gosh. Scott,
I know, he doesn't like Hook. It's crazy. But I do think the reason why Hook doesn't work for a lot of people is he is, like, trying to Spielberg the shit out of that movie, right? He's, like, quadrupling down on what he thinks people like about Spielberg. And that's why I think when people watch it with that point of view and aren't a 5-year-old like I was when I saw it, right, they're not going to like it nearly as much as I will from my nostalgic point of view. But here's a take. What if Hook was a musical? Would it still work?
If it didn't have any of the people, the production design, the script, or the director, then it
you're being facetious. That film wasn't a Spielberg film. It originally was Nick, whatever his name is, and he took it over. What?
It's hard for me to hear negative things about Hook. I get emotionally reactive.
Well, Scott is coming from a, like, as a film, as a cinematic discussion, Hook is bad. We're talking about it as is a fun film from our childhood that we love deeply.
Right. And you guys like flawed. It because it's nostalgia for you. For me, I was an older teenager who was starting to get
who was
more
too
serious
cool.
about film.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't cool too cool. Show it to a child now. Show it to a child now. And
my nephews love that movie.
It's two and a half hours. It's bloated and it doesn't look good.
We can have a whole podcast on this.
Oh, totally.
Legit. I
Let's
have
do
so
it.
Much to say about that.
But no, that's not what I meant by Spielberg stuff. First of all, Spielberg has very much lost his identity as an artist. He doesn't know exactly what he's doing. And my biggest question about this before and after and today is why. And when you go and you start to look for interviews with him, he talks about Romeo and Juliet. That's what he's talking about, the gang thing. But what he also does and has done consistently for many years now is he makes these blunders because he doesn't fully trust his audience, and or he thinks he's being clever and he's not. There's a casting in this particular one that almost ruins it for me, even on the rewatches.
Which is what?
Moreno.
Whoa. Okay.
Because it makes me think of the original. It makes me think of the original. It takes me out of it. It's so cheesy a choice and dopey a choice. Like, if you're gonna do,
it, I would just, only you know, agree with you if it was a cameo. But because she's playing a full, realized, new take on a role that already exists, it loses that cheesiness for me.
Not for me. And he's done that again and again and again. But you're talking about a guy who his best movie was made in 1982, and he's never been better since, in my opinion. So,
well, I will compromise Bridge on of Spies. That. I think
Bridge of Spies. No, he ruins that because he rocks. Does a dumb Spielberg.
I don't like that. He
does a dumb
like
Spielberg thing with it that ruins it, just like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. I'm sorry, Pam. Please go ahead.
No, I honestly totally forgot what I was just
I'm a dick.
Say.
I'm such a dick.
No, it was fine. It's fine.
Spielberg's probably the reason that I'm here. So I'm very emotionally tied to him. And so when one of your heroes does disappointing things, then it hits you. And so he continues to do these little things that I'm very hypersensitive to. That being said, there are some extraordinary things that he does. He's still the best mover of a camera and framer of a shot in the world, on the planet Earth. There's very few people that do what he does, and he does it exceptionally well with this and really his first and only musical. I mean, he's got musical numbers and some stuff, but and so that's kind of what I like about it. And then he does some great casting in this, and then he does some dumb bad casting in this that makes me go, I'm out. Like, so when I watch it, I don't hate it. I enjoy it. I should have said I enjoy it. I'm just aware of it. I'm not in it. It's not.
I remember what I was going to say.
Do it.
So Rita Moreno, what I was going to compromise with you on is that, yes, I do think he heavily relied on that casting to just be this like, oh, my God, how great. But I also think it worked.
What do you mean relied? What did he rely
like,
on?
Like, I think, to me, it was just kind of like came with a little bit of a roll of the eyes, a little bit.
Wow.
It was just not predictable, but predictable in its unpredictability kind of thing. I do think he relied on it, but I do think she was great and I thought it worked. But it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing a little bit with that choice.
Yeah,
I mean,
she's
it's a reference.
She's
it's
Rita
an
Moreno
homage. I think that's purpose. Yeah, I mean, I guess go ahead, Siege.
I think also with her, and this is something that in the iterations I've seen it, it's something that I don't think anyone has ever like straight up handled. But in the final scene where Anita comes to tell old what's-his-name that Maria is coming, and they corner her in the drugstore. It's all, every time I've seen it, it's been this dancey thing where they're threatening her, and it's the first time that she comes up, Rita comes up, she stops it, and she tells them exactly what they were doing. And I was like, thank you for not glossing over this really serious moment that, like, when I've watched it, it's gotten me really choked up, and then it's just kind of, it's like a dance thing where they spin her in a circle, and then it's over.
Right, right. No, it's a very powerful moment. And I should also say that I do love all of the Kushner tweaks to it, for sure.
Bailey's upset. Talk
I'm not.
Us.
I'm just tired of carrying this fucking podcast all the time.
God.
No, it's fine.
Here we go.
I honestly, like, I think I hear what you're all saying about the Moreno thing, and I'm just going, like, we're talking about a musical. Like, you know, like, it feels a bit like, and I'm not saying you guys are doing this, but it does feel a bit like, the too, like, I'm too cool for that. Where I'm like, no, this, she won an Oscar for this. This is an homage. This is a beautiful thing to bring somebody from that piece and bring it in. If it had been, you know, if I had had five other people in the movie from the original, I'd probably start going like, oh, fuck. But
sure.
He wanted this. He was like, I really want Rita to be this role and to take it and do a new take on it. And Kushner, you know, really pushed for it as well. And not necessarily to be Rita, but just to be a Latina woman, like someone who can really handle this in the right way. And to make it Rita is beautiful to me, rather than like a try hard kind of thing.
Well, and I also think that she's part of the vehicle of something that I appreciate about this film in comparison to the older one, is I feel like this version, and perhaps it should hand it to Kushner more, I think they handle the gray area way better
100%
in the old film. And that was something that I appreciated about this, especially watching it the second time through.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I was a little nervous when I went into this film. There was that first moment where I was like, okay, is he going to do it? The first shot happened, and I was like, okay, he did it. And then I just relaxed the rest of the movie because it, to me, was more just about, like, is it going to look, which, it's Spielberg, like you said, Scott, like, it's going to look amazing.
Yeah.
Is it going to look better than the original, which also looks amazing?
Sure. Right.
And also feel of the time, and also feel homage-y without being the same movie. And it does all those things kind of just in that first scene. But then it also, I think an early complaint or worry, not complaint, that you had, Scott, was, is he going to pull a bunch of punches and have this not be really the West Side it could be? And instead, he actually goes full on with the punches, and it brutalizes it a bit. I mean, one of the first things that happens, someone gets like pummeled in the face and gets a nail through their ear, right? And you're just like, oh crap. And then there's a few more of those moments, and where the brutality is there, and it makes you kind of fear these dudes a little bit more. They are gangsters. They are guys who are actually gonna beat the shit out of you if you look at them wrong. Yeah. These aren't just like singer dancer types. They just happen to, you know. And I love that stuff. One of my favorite changes is the way, and this could be Kushner, but I think the direction is phenomenal. And the location scout gets a shout out for this one. They're up on the roof and they're singing "Cool." Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Boy, crazy boy, stay cool, boy. And they change the context of it, that they're talking about whether or not to take the gun, right, to this rumble. And normally, I believe this comes after the rumble, as like everybody needs to chill out.
There's some things moved around ever so slightly.
And contextually, it's super cool because then they have them kicking around and playing with this gun, and sort of almost dropping it, and there's these holes on the ceiling that they're kind of jumping over and all this stuff. I fucking love that. I thought that was one of the best sort of changes that they made. And then there's a few others. I heard a lot of people say they didn't like the placement of "I Feel Pretty," but that's where it is in the musical. That's the point, is that it comes in right after he's died, and we're like, why are we watching a musical theater number right now?
It's very Osric-y. They're trying to get you to smile before they devastate you.
100%.
Yeah.
But I did, Bailey, I wanted to say I agree with you when you're like, when you went into West Side Story, you were like, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? And then it started and you were on board.
Yeah.
And I think there were so many people going to this West Side Story like, Let's see. You know, he had a lot of pressure on him. You know, it's Spielberg and then it's West Side Story. And I think you're right. Like, I felt the same thing, that I was like, okay, I'll enjoy the ride. I trust you, because the opening was a punch. It was great.
And I don't think every choice is correct. There are a few moments where I was a little like, and maybe over-directing is the correct way to talk about it. Like, there's just, trying to think of a specific moment where I was like, okay. But one moment that I love is at the dance. The dance is really cool.
The dance is my favorite
part. The gym dance really rocks. And that's the most iconic scene from the original film.
Totally.
But when normally what happens is, even on stage, is everyone dissipates when they see each other for the first time, Maria and Tony. Mm-hmm. Everyone dissipates off stage, and there's like two people left, and or two couples left, and they do the dance with them, and it's the bloom, 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 bloom.
Which they still did the dance, but it was under the bleachers.
It's right. Under the bleachers.
And they turned up the R&J in that scene, too, which was
exactly.
Fun.
So they sort of turn up this idea of, like, okay, they see each other, but then they find a private space. So this isn't in the middle of everybody. This is in their own little private space. And there's this beautiful thing that they do where everything becomes sort of dreamlike under these bleachers, and everything's really beautiful and nice and cool, and there's no trash and there's no dust, and everything looks great. And then when it cuts away, for the, and someone pulls her away, the way that it, the transition warp back into the dirty under the bleachers, and there's like beach balls and basketballs and bats, and it's such a cool transition that I was like, there were enough of those moments that I was just kind of at a high the whole movie.
Yeah.
And so I've only watched it the one time that I saw it in theaters. I didn't rewatch it for this podcast.
Oh, wow.
I was going to. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sit down and do it. I'm a little afraid to.
Oh.
I am. I'm a little afraid that the high that I had watching it the first time won't be there the second time.
Oh, I get you. I get you.
You know?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because
okay.
For you. Because
right.
You connected with it in a way that I didn't. Like I said, I enjoyed it. I was in the same boat as everybody else, kind of like my arms crossed, like, all right, show me. And it's like, oh, by the end of that first number, you're like, okay, this is cool. This
but
is cool.
By the end of the first number of Into the Woods, I'm like, this is going to be the best movie ever, and then it isn't.
Right.
This one does feel like it keeps its... It stays at that level. It never like fully dips in like a whole number. Like I can't think of a number that dips for me.
No, it arcs well. And what Spielberg has always done well too is that there's a seamlessness to it, even in the original, and certainly in most productions that I've seen. You feel like the energy is put on specific numbers and specific things, but not necessarily equally distributed amongst all of it.
Yeah.
And so there are moments in stage productions I've seen where all of the energy is put into the balcony scene.
Yeah.
And that's where everything, like, that's where all the
and
time
I was
and
worried
money.
That was going to be America for this movie.
Right. Oh, no, and sure. It's not. No, I really liked
great
her.
Number though, right? Yeah, yeah. I love the way they do that.
I was worried that he was going to throw all his eggs in that basket.
Right.
Like,
no,
it's
it's the flow into those numbers where you don't feel like I've felt like the show has stopped and we're setting up for whichever number it might be too often because, you know, people have their favorites, especially stage directors. And for him, it all flowed one into another. And then I think that there, again, we go back to the cast. There is a couple of truly revelatory performances in this movie.
Yeah.
I think that, well, all five of us, the four of us are the only ones who saw that movie. Like nobody else saw it was the biggest problem. It just, for whatever reason, well, it was a pretty big flop. I mean,
what?
West Side.
What movie?
Oh,
Spielberg.
West Side.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those that it, you know, it
my theater
kind
was
of,
pretty full when I saw it, but I know that's
yeah, it had a good opening weekend, but it in my opinion, and I might be way off base, and I know Scott, like early on, even before it came out, you said like it's not going to sell. Like, I think COVID killed this more than it being a musical killed it personally, because I think in a non-COVID minded world, this would have made a lot more money. It's just the fact that because we're in this sort of COVID mind and movie theaters, especially when it came out, movie theaters weren't fully open yet. It was one of the first major films to come out in movie theaters. Yeah. So people were still a little weird about it. It sold very well in New York and LA. It didn't sell anywhere else. And I think part of it is just marketing also. It wasn't marketed.
Well, also, they know you're going to be bummed out. And everybody was already bummed out.
Well, you know, we talked at Christmas season too.
True,
like,
true.
You know, I
weird
think
timing.
That, It was weird timing, and I think
should
they
have been
were...
spring. Should have been spring.
Well, it's not a summer blockbuster either, so I don't
know. I don't think it's a summer blockbuster,
but
I think you're right, Pam. I think it may have done better as an April release
or even led into
the summer or something like that. But I think that the marketing people were also just hoping Spielberg alone.
I agree.
Spielberg, West Side Story, who wouldn't want to see this?
Because they're not doing what Into the Woods did with stunt casting. In fact, it's a lot of people who no one would ever know their name besides maybe Ansel Elgort. And you know, you have like Brian D'Arcy James and like Corey Stoll, like filling out the
Mr.
roles,
but
those aren't even like massive stars. Brian D'Arcy James is known in theater circles but not as well in film besides like Spotlight,
right.
Let's talk through this cast. Really interesting cast. Oh, I wanted to say something about films real quick. We talked about in Little Shop of Horrors how they had to change the ending because people don't want to go see a sad movie ending because they don't get to see the cast come out and bow at the end, right?
Right.
That might be something to that, Pam. There might be something to we go and see West Side Story and it's Christmas time and we're like, I don't want to see the Romeo and Juliet's ending
now. Why Shirley Temple was so huge because the war was happening and everyone wanted
Happy
to see
endings.
A little girl sing and dance.
Yeah, totally.
On the steps with her tap shoes.
That's right. She's so good.
So good. So let's talk through this cast.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any failures here. Does anybody have a failure?
Corey Stoll.
Isn't great. I would agree with that. I don't know that he's like a failure as an actor. I just don't think he's good.
I just don't care for him. And he's such an everyman actor who gets these awesome opportunities and then doesn't really do anything with them. He's the most boring MCU villain.
I was about to say,
he's
the worst MCU
villain. Oh my god, dude.
And I love that movie.
Yeah,
he's just not good in it.
Yeah,
I did like him in the first couple seasons
Ant-Man.
He's
the bad guy in Ant-Man.
Yeah, the first couple seasons of whatchamacallit? What's the fucking
House of Cards?
House of Cards. Yeah,
yeah.
He's pretty good in that. But
I will still stand by that. I wasn't crazy about Ansel as Tony. He's got a great voice.
Yeah.
And I really liked the gal that played Maria. I just didn't buy their relationship, and
didn't have the greatest chemistry.
Right, and he just
overall.
Wasn't a Tony for me, that's all.
I've heard a lot of people, well, I shouldn't say a lot. I've heard y'all say that a few times, and a few other people say that. I fully disagree, and based on every interview between them, they were, like, so tight on set and, like, all this stuff. I feel it between them. I, like, really do, and maybe I'm putting something there that's not there, and I think a lot of it is her. I think she is phenomenal at playing I am in love with this person I don't know. Rachel Zegler, I think, is the best Maria I've ever seen.
She's
like,
great.
She's
so
just
good.
Incredible. And not just as a singer, just like actress, like moments of nuance that are just profound. But my take on Ansel is that he's playing it more like, I think I've said this to y'all before, but I liken him to Danny from Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, that he's somebody who knows he has a dark side and he has to constantly keep it from boiling up.
Right.
And so he is a brute. He's not a playboy. He's not a, like, he's not a suave, charming guy like Tony is usually played, right? Mm. He's a gangster that went to jail because he killed someone.
Exactly, yeah. They changed the background.
Like, his
motivations were very
yeah.
different in this version.
And I think for that purpose, it does work for me.
Oh, I see. That's where I didn't believe he killed anybody.
Interesting.
He's one of those pretty actors that he's had it easy. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like she's working harder in the scenes than he is. And
well, he's probably the biggest star in the film, right? Because he's Baby Driver. He's in the Divergent or whatever those are called. Divergent? That's what they're called, right?
Yes.
Fault in Our Stars, things like he has a huge teen following.
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm.
I think there was partly that of casting him.
I don't by any stretch think he's awful. I just, it was, But here's the thing, too, about West Side. I and it's the same with Romeo and Juliet. I usually am waiting for the Romeo and Juliet scenes to and or Juliet scenes to be done. And I want the secondary characters because they're far more interesting to me.
Well, I agree. And especially this casting of those secondary characters.
Oh, there's one.
Bar none.
Oh, man. That's a
maybe
revelation.
The best casting in a movie musical ever. Besides maybe Rent, because it's the original cast mostly. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know that I could. I'm hard pressed to name another movie musical that has a cast where I think every single person is perfect, spot on.
Wizard of Oz.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Cabaret.
Cabaret.
Actually,
Cabaret is actually it's pretty great.
Yeah, no, Joel Grey and Liza.
Well, because but they're getting people that sing, and then they're not trying to do any stunt. He's not trying to do any stunt casting.
Right. Mm-hmm. We already talked about Rachel, but let's talk about Ariana DeBose.
Ugh. Two thumbs up. Love.
See,
loved.
She's great. She's phenomenal. But that was the mistake also of putting Moreno in the movie, is that I just keep thinking about
you kept
her.
Comparing them?
I kept comparing,
oh,
and she... Listen, that would be a hell of a shootout. Like, if both of them in their prime just, like, singing each other, you know, doing a sing-off would be... insane. She's amazing. Was it an Academy Award winning amazing?
I would agree with that. I don't think it was the best performance of the year, but I think it was quite phenomenal. And
for this film, for sure.
Yeah, and to compare to Moreno, I do think she's giving it enough of a new take that I don't.
She does
constantly
compare,
right. But.
I agree. She does.
It's hard,
does
not,
make it
it's
her
hard
own.
Not to when they're
it's hard
both
not to.
Right
that's
in front
true.
Of your face.
Do you
when
know
you're
she's
not
playing...
attached to the old film like me, I just watched her and loved her the whole time.
Yeah. Right, true.
So that's...
I also know that she's playing Calypso in the new Kraven the Hunter film, which I'm extremely excited about. That's a Kraven the
That'd
Hunter fan.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
It's a new MCU movie. Mm-hmm. Okay, so... Ariana, and then we have David Alvarez as Bernardo, who I think is fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic. I think that death scene really hit my gut in a way that even the original doesn't.
Agreed. Totally agree. Much stronger in this.
I think so too. I think it's the
acting. Their relationship was sexy as fuck.
Yeah.
Totally. So much heat.
I love
that. That's
so
the
much.
Chemistry. That
it's the way he looks at her.
Caliente.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian D'Arcy James is Krupke.
He's great. Sure. He's fine. Yeah, yeah.
He's fine. He says the lines.
Yeah, it's
he says he does.
There's only so much.
Four
only,
lines.
He does
it's
try
a cameo.
And he does try and give it some nuance and some.
He
you know,
tries and they.
But
add
there's
some
only
lines.
So much you can do with it. You know, there's only so much you could do.
Brian D'Arcy James, it's more of like a cute cameo than it is anything. It's like this guy that you love from Broadway is in the movie. And you're, Corey Stoll, I think not a fantastic performance. My two favorite performances in this film are Riff and Chino.
Riff.
I think
I
Mike
Riff.
Feist. Let's talk about Mike Feist
first. He's great.
This is the revelation of the movie. This is the best thing
Oscar
about
snub.
The movie is him, total Oscar snub. Like he takes this role and lays waste to whoever has played it before, with all due respect to Mr. Tamblyn.
I 100% agree.
Like
unfortunately.
He finds nuance and layers in a character that nobody's ever found before. Not that I've seen anyway. And
speaking of the rumble
amazing.
And the death scene, the moment when he gets stabbed and then like turns around to Tony and I don't remember what the line is, but he just has that line of like, they got me kid, or like whatever, and you're just like, oh, he is, and he permeates. Riff can either do this or not do this in the show, when you're watching the show, and I don't know that Russ Tamblyn does this in the original movie. you have to, Riff can permeate the entire show, even once he's dead, where you feel that loss so hard. And Bernardo.
He's fucking Mercutio.
It's Mercutio. Yes. I mean, that's what a great Mercutio
exactly.
should do, you know?
And yeah. I don't always feel that when I see this show,
for
right?
Sure.
This time, I mean, he steals this movie.
Yeah.
To the point where Tony's death doesn't even really hit in the same
way. That's true, yeah. I got to see Mike in Dear Evan Hansen in
cool.
New York.
How was he?
He was wonderful.
Because he was the Connor, right?
Connor,
he was
yeah.
The guy
right,
who died.
The
right.
kid who kills himself. Yeah. Yeah, he was just phenomenal. Like, he's so good. He's on stage, on screen.
We'll put a trigger warning at the beginning that we talked about Dear Evan Hansen, because I know people don't want to hear about that. No, I'm just kidding. That was bad. Okay, so who else? Oh, Josh Andreas Rivera, who plays Chino.
Oh, yeah, yeah, really
I know
good.
It's a small part.
Bigger in this than in...
It is,
than
that's true.
Yeah, and
they stretch it out a bit, and he rocks.
Yeah.
To play between the, like, very shy, calm, and then the, like, I'm gonna kill a man. Like, back and forth is really a cool duality that he performs. And then the last person I want to bring up is Ezra Menez, who plays Anybody's. I'll give my take first, just because
friend of mine. What's their real name?
In the movie, they are credited as Iris Menez, but they have since changed to Ezra Menez.
Copy that.
So if you look it up on IMDb, it's Iris. But then there's like two dead names before that as well. I've known Ezra as many things, but Ezra is currently their nomenclature, nom de plume. But I personally think the way the character is handled is okay. I think the Spielberg moments of it being of like it sort of zooming in on anybody's, I'm going to use they them pronouns because I think that's kind of what they're going for in this
for
film
sure,
is that
yeah.
anybody's
yeah,
is non-binary,
yeah.
which is why they cast a non-binary person, which I love and is very beautiful.
Right on.
But there are those moments where it like zooms in on anybody's and Ezra kind of has that look of like, I'm going to do it. And I'm like, ugh, like that sort of musical theater-y, Spielberg-y kind of thing. But I feel like that's more directorial than it is, where it's sort of trying to point at what he's doing there with the casting rather
the
than it just being.
The storyline was shoehorned in. I think
I
it
agree.
Was a good idea.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have characters as that in the show, but
cool
like,
representation.
Yes, but they didn't take enough time with it.
Yeah, they could have pulled it off
enough.
Better.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
Or just not say it.
Right,
like, that's what it felt
it's
like.
The,
yes,
it's the nod, and that's an example of Spielberg not fully trusting his audience.
It's like a pat on the back almost.
That's a great way to put it, Pam. It feels like somebody being like, it feels like Spielberg and everyone working on the movie being like, we did this, y'all. Let's highlight it four
we
times.
Solved the problem.
Yeah.
Let's make sure
and
really see
this. And it's a double-edged sword there. It's like you want to give them credit because we're not doing it enough as an industry and all that. But then it's just like, okay, buddy, I got you.
Something I will give them credit for that they don't talk about this a lot. They don't like point at it a lot. About 45% of this film, I would argue, out of the book, is in Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a solid amount, and they don't put subtitles.
No.
And it's a matter of not giving English the power here, especially because of the sort of sordid history of West Side Story and the idea that the Jets are kind of portrayed as the... Like, you know, the winners should be the Jets. That's kind of how the sentiment was, right, when it first came out. And I think the ability to make this movie about Anita and Bernardo and Riff and Tony and Maria and Tony, right? Like, the ability to not just have it be about Riff and Tony. Tony meets Maria. Tony wants Maria. Gets Maria. Everyone dies, right? Like, that's sort of the original story, and now it's more like, no, the Capulets and the Montagues are on the same level here, right? The Montagues don't get to win. There's no winning here. Everyone dies. Everyone loses. And I love that. I think that's a phenomenal choice that doesn't feel...
Forced.
Never feels like they're padding their... Yeah, there's no forcing, and they don't feel like they're highlighting it in a way that's annoying.
I
Agreed. I would venture too that this version, thanks, and maybe Cam. It's just because I saw it as an adult as opposed to seeing it as a kid, is the cast feels like kids in this, whereas in the old film they feel like adults playing kids.
Sure. Which, you know, I mean, I think Ansel's a little older, but yeah, I agree.
He's got baby face, though.
He does have that baby driver face. I agree, Siege. They feel like high school or
which
even
makes
just like
it
young
even
college
sadder. It makes it sadder and, you know, it's a sadder story that way.
The deaths were more effective.
Yes.
For sure.
And I got to give it to him. One of my big, Pam and these two have heard it, one of my big criticisms of Spielberg is that he hasn't been able to end movies well for a very long time. And he sticks it here. Like, it's beautiful.
Well, he had no choice.
No choice.
The shots, the cinematography of that ending, though, too, could be cheesy or wrong. And he lets it do, he kind of lets it do what the original does and really just let you sit with it.
It's a very theater ending.
It does.
Which I dig. I dig.
Too.
Nothing like a good old funeral procession at the end of a show.
And, we should give a shout out to Janusz Kaminski, who's been one of Spielberg's longtime cinematographers.
Absolutely. It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. It's just,
And there's like a graininess and a dullness to everything that really works and sets us in the 50s a little bit.
Apparently he went back and studied the film from the 50s to get a sense, to get that grain, that look, that
I love
feel.
It.
It's
it
like,
works.
Yeah. I mean,
because it's not the Spielberg technique, consistently glosses things. There's always like a glow, a Spielberg radiation on his movies,
agreed.
That wasn't in this one.
Which is something I didn't like about Ready Player One, a movie I was ready to love, because I love that book so much. But unfortunately, the what that book does so well is make you feel like the real world is such shit that when you get into VR, everything's beautiful. But the way he shoots everything so crisp and clean and clean and clear and under control, it's like you... Clear cell. When he's in the real world in Ready Player One, everything's already cool looking. I'm like, I would live in that world. That looks awesome. It looks like a CGI animation.
Yeah.
And then when he goes into VR, I'm like, oh, now it's animated? It's like actually animated? Oh, lame.
That wasn't a movie for him to make.
Really wasn't.
He was part of the pop culture that was being riffed on. So he's riffing on the pop culture that he was already
correct.
A part
and the
of
most and... upsetting piece of that puzzle is that there are actual plot points in the book that relate to Spielberg.
Oh yeah,
things,
very much so.
And he just took them out because he was like, I don't want to talk about myself as pop culture. And I'm like, fuck you. And then he makes like Zemeckis a big part of it and all this. And you're just like, why? That's your apprentice. This is weird.
Yeah, exactly.
It's weird. It's not an homage. It's a masturbation session. I still think that movie slaps though. So we'll talk about it some other day. There are parts of that movie that rock. Okay. One other scene I just wanted to bring up. This is my final take. And then I want to hear everybody's sort of final thoughts on this. But, favorite songs, anything like that. But one scene I really loved is the scene that when people do it in the musical and especially in the movie, it always feels neutered to me. This is the scene where Anita goes to find Tony.
Right.
And she ends up at Doc's.
Right.
And the men assault her.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was talking about at the beginning, too.
Yeah.
Right. And we've talked about brutality, mm-hmm. right? And how this movie doesn't feel like it's pulling its punches. The Kushner choice to have her come in and literally say out loud what it feels like every production is afraid to admit is happening there. She says, you came in here and you raped her. Right. That is what just happened.
Yeah.
Whether you got as far as you meant to or doesn't matter, you did that. And she says the word. Like, she says it. And that, I think that performance solidifies Rita Moreno for me as great. She is Doc for me now. Like, it just, I love that scene so much on a cultural level as well, what it's saying about thematically what the culture is doing at that point. And they do a really good job of also showing the gentrification of everything through... Kushner uses the device of that Broadway theater being built.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Lincoln Center. It's like literally like
Lincoln Center is being built.
Like one of the first shots, that whole opening sequence that all that stuff where they're like running around, is on the rubble of the construction of a Broadway theater. Yeah. Right. And that's cool. And he doesn't feel the need to really point at it. You see a sign at one point and they kind of mention it in passing, but there's not like a need to shove it in our faces. But this is Spielberg's dad's favorite movie. It was one of his favorite movies. There was no way he was going to just jerk all over the place like he did with Ready Player One. Right. Like he spent his time on this one for sure.
Yeah.
And I hope he does with the Fablemans because
he did
really
it justice. He really did.
Yeah. Okay. Last takes.
Yeah, like I said, I just have nitpicky Spielberg-y things, but overall, I did enjoy it and thought it was well done and some great performances, to be sure.
Did you like In the Heights more than this, or did you like this better?
Well, that's such an apples and oranges question, Bailey, though a good one. I loved In the Heights, the movie. I really, really did. But it was also so fresh for me. Like, I'd heard the album. I hadn't seen a production of it. So, or maybe I had by that point. I can't remember the order, but...
In the Heights came out first, so you probably saw it first.
No, I mean whether or not I'd seen a stage production
before, because I saw it
like right around. But no, I really, really liked In the Heights, but it's apples and oranges. I wouldn't compare it. He was carrying a lot of weight. In making this. So,
anyone else? Final thoughts?
I was glad to rewatch it. I liked it. I think it was it was a tall order to fill, and I think he did it.
Yeah. P.
Two words. Gym dance.
Gym dance.
So good.
So good.
Just iconic.
Right.
Iconic. And the choreography is phenomenal. And a great nod to Jerome Robbins without being the literal Jerome Robbins the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. All right. That's all. That's really all we have here, y'all. We're about to do something, though, that is my most favorite part of this podcast. And it's taken 4 episodes to get here, but we're here. So we're going in on it. Let's rank these motherfuckers.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
All right, y'all.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
I love ranking shit. So we're going to rank these 4 movies that we just watched. Scott, I want you to start us off. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, my God. Oh,
no, this is a tough one.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
This is really, really hard. Into the Woods is number 4.
Does anyone not have Into the Woods at number 4? Pam, number 4?
I don't, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I'm going to go Into the Woods. Then I'm going to go West Side and Little Shop and Fiddler.
Number 1 is Fiddler?
Yeah.
If he was a rich man. All right, Siege?
4, Into the Woods. 3, West Side Story. 2, Little Shop. 1, Fiddler.
Pamela?
We're the same.
4, West Side. 3, Fiddler. 2, Into the Woods. 1, Little Shop.
Ooh.
Wow.
Nice.
You like Into the Woods a little more than us.
That's legit. But I was so drunk, you guys. I was so drunk.
Yeah.
Number 4, Into the Woods for me. Number 3, Fiddler on the Roof. Number 2, West Side Story. Number 1, Little Shop. I love that movie. I think Little Shop is one of the best ever. And now, the way that I'm judging this is kind of based on this, okay? I truly think Little Shop of Horrors is the best ever mesh of film and theater. I both feel like I'm watching a movie and a staged filmed version of the musical at the same time. And I can't say that about really any other musical.
Like,
yeah, it still is cinematic.
It's still theatrical. Yeah.
Now, I didn't get to be at the conversation. My fault. My fault.
Well,
when you talked about Little Shop. My fault.
Yeah.
Meek shall inherit when he goes, my future's starting. Yep. I've got to let it stick with that plan to do my bit. Oh my God. I think that music is so
good.
Freaking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. It's musically brilliant.
I think one of the greatest moments in musical, I just got chills thinking about it. One of the greatest musical moments ever is poor All my life, I've always been poor.
Yeah.
And I'm asking God what I'm for. That's, I mean, you can't beat it.
Sweep that floor, it's kid.
Sweep that floor, kid. Oh.
Oh, really quick. I got to play Audrey when I was 16 in a production of Little Shop. But here's the crazy thing. Ellen Green came and she, before the show, came up to me and hugged me and in my ear said, I'm on your team. And then afterwards, I have a picture with her with the whole cast. Afterwards, she came up to me and hugged me and said, you were lovely.
Wow.
Aww.
That's amazing. I was dead about it.
That's incredible. I would not have been able to meet her beforehand.
No, I would have exploded.
I was so mad at the director. I was so mad at him for doing that. But I was pleasant. Good improv background.
Yeah, well done. That's fucking cool. I love Little Shop. I love Little Shop, and I love that movie. And Fiddler, West Side, and Little Shop to me are near perfect films.
Yeah.
I only put Fiddler barely under West Side because we're having to rank. But I think it's more that like Fiddler's something I've watched so many times. I don't know that I could talk negatively about it. But like we found some things, like in the episode we found a few things. But like West Side Story to me is just the Spielberg of it all versus Norman Jewison. Just little things like that where I just think it's a better film. Do I like the musical better? No, I actually think Fiddler on the Roof is a better musical than West Side Story. Interesting. We'll discuss it some other day. Hey, rank the musicals for me real quick. You got them?
What? Oh,
the musical stage shows.
Oh,
here we go.
Oh,
I got you.
That's different. That's a little different.
That's different.
It's different. I want to hear it. Mine is number four, West Side Story. Number three, Little Shop. Number two, Into the Woods. And number one, Fiddler.
I got mine.
Okay. Go for it.
Four, West Side Story. Three, Little Shop. Two, Fiddler. One, Into the Woods.
So we switch our one and two. Okay, Scott?
Okay, I would do West Side four.
Yeah.
Fiddler three. Little Shop. Into the Woods.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay, Pam. I mean, Into the Woods is undeniable. It's fucking Sondheim. Pam?
Oh, God. West Side Story number four. Fiddler number three. Little Shop number two and Into the Woods number one.
Great.
That makes sense
all
to me.
Great
minds,
place.
Pam.
I love it.
Great minds, Pam.
Also, Pam, though, like, I have to be honest.
That was so much pressure. I know, right?
I have to be honest, though, Pam, like, Runaway Clone, the musical that you wrote that I directed at Fringe 5 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that, does very much feel like a sister piece to Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, 100%. It's very influenced. Yeah.
B-movie sci-fi feels with that kind of... Ow!
Jeez. You all right?
I'm gesturing on an audio medium, and it's fine. Everyone
It's very dramatic.
I think he's in pain, you guys.
Yeah, I am. But I'm glad we got to drop this in the middle of the week. People get a double-stuffed Oreo of... Of not sponsored, by the way. Double stuffed Oreo of
non-sponsored stuffed Oreos.
Theater. But thanks for joining us for another bonus mini series. Join us next week as we begin our next playwright, quote unquote playwright, mini series. That's right. It's Pod Podcast. No, it's Tick Tick Pod. No, it's Pod Boom.
Pod Podcast.
I like Pod Podcast.
Okay, but with all the, you have to see it with the
we gotta see the
punctuation
graphic
for it to really work.
Yeah.
Or and else you may it's have to podcast. Post on Facebook. You may have to
damn
do it.
It. All right. But yeah, thanks for joining us, and we'll do Larson with special guest Brittany Wheeler. Look forward to it.
Ooh.
Each close it out.
Questions, comments, compliments. You can reach us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Don't send compliments.
No, you can pay us respect.
Mean things only. Scott Sampson, we're talking to you.
Big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson for writing our theme song. Here's a fact: our theme song is better than your theme song.
Yes,
it's true.
Thank you.
That's true.
He also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. A big shout out to Pam Quinn for joining us for this and for contributing
Thank you.
Thanks, Pam.
Virtually every episode of our of our show. If she's not on the show, then she's writing songs for the show.
That's true.
That's right. That's right.
We love you, Pamela.
And we love Pam.
Oh, yes, we do. Bye-bye, Birdie.
And then finally to the great Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Annie Baker, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it.
Hey, Scott, I've been meaning to tell you that I think the Annie Baker, we can retire the entire Annie Baker bit. Like, we don't even bring it up anymore.
And one day,
I feel like this is an offline conversation.
No. I'm creating an Annie Baker conversation about Annie Baker. I'm being meta.
It's inversing on itself. One day, Annie Baker, we're going to buy you a fucking beer.
It's true. Write us a review. We love you so much. Send us insults.
Poor.
All my life, I've always been poor.
Finishing the hat.
Oh boy.
How you have to finish the hat. It's my Mandy Patinkin. How you have to wipe the foil from my window while you finish the hat. It's pretty good. My Patinkin's pretty good.
It's not bad.
And there's nothing but sky. And when the woman that you wanted goes, you can say to yourself, well, I did what I did. That's good. Come on.
It's good. It's okay.
It's really good.
Go listen to it again. It's pretty solid.
Send in compliments about it.
Always send me.
Later, everybody.
The theater. The theater. Sing out, Louis! Theater. To me.